saddest and most momentous turning points in the history of the United Kingdom. There's nobody in this country or the world who hasn't lived the majority of their lives under the reign of Queen Elizabeth II. For 70 years she served this country with astoundingly dedicated duty. I struggle to even imagine a Britain without this Queen. But with great sadness, we now have to imagine it, because the moment we've all been dreading has finally come. And tonight everything changes. Her death is an enormous blow, not just to the British people, but to our national psyche.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Paul Kirtman on The Paul Kirtman Show, coming to you this beautiful Saturday. And, of course, that is Pierce Morgan talking about the death of Queen Elizabeth. And this is one of those moments in world history that certainly the whole world is going to be paying attention to, especially Queen Elizabeth. And the reason for that is for this reason. She was a World War II veteran. Did you know that, Zach?
Yes, I did.
Okay, a lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. Queen Elizabeth is a World War II veteran. She served in a motor pool as a mechanic or something, as an enlisted soldier in the British military during World War II. And it wasn't too long after that that she was coronated and ascended the throne as Queen Elizabeth. And certainly for my entire life, I'm 41 years old, whenever I think of England, you can't help but not think of Queen Elizabeth. And now she's finally, and I say finally because she's lived a long life. She's passed away at 97 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty incredible. And I don't really know a whole lot about Queen Elizabeth, but I know this. Lots of world leaders have really held her in incredibly high regard, which is remarkable because you can't say the same for the rest of the rest of the royal family, right?
Right.
You got one of her sons who's wrapped in and tied into this whole conspiracy and regarding human trafficking and Jeffrey Epstein, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Prince Andrew. And then her other son, Prince Charles, who will now become King Charles,
yes.
I suppose.
Uh-huh.
Right? You know, he was married to Princess Diana, who passed away tragically in a car accident in the mid-late 1990s. And now her grandson, Harry, who's married to Meghan Markle, the former actress from the TV show Suits, and they are just a complete train wreck.
Yes, they are.
Now, do you follow any of that, or like?
Not really. I mean, I saw it a little bit when, you know, Harry first left the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of saw the big, you know, national coverage of that, but beyond that, no.
So as I follow the news, they always find their way into the American news cycle, and it is so incredibly annoying because Harry and Meghan are ultra woke, like super woke. and it's just so comical, and I'm embarrassed for them. Like, they left the royal family because they're like, we want to make it on our own. But of course, that making it on your own includes, you know, your incredibly large, generous allowance that they still get from the royal family. And their own security detail. And they get to keep their houses over in England, you know, in all these different countryside, multi-thousand-acre estates. They get to keep all that. But, of course, they left the royal family because they want to make it on their own.
Yeah, yeah. That was the whole thing, even, that I knew from the start when he wanted to leave the family. I was like, yeah, but he doesn't have to, like, give up that much, I don't think.
He's not giving up anything.
Yeah.
What he's given up is the responsibility that comes with being a royal.
Mm-hmm.
He's given that up.
Right.
He doesn't have to polish his medals and make sure his uniform's tight and make sure that he's participating in all these ceremonies. He gets to completely absolve himself of all these other responsibilities that the people kind of expect you to continue to maintain for the sake of tradition, you know, and for the monarchy and the identity of the British people. So he's completely left all that. And he's over here doing podcasts and writing tell-all books, right? Because it turns out Harry and Meghan are really nothing more than just gossips.
Yeah.
And they don't really hold our own constitution in very high regard. I think Harry said, you know, for the First Amendment, freedom of speech, that's bonkers. Calls it bonkers. Calls the First Amendment bonkers. Well, what would you expect from the British, right? Somebody from the British royal family. I mean, it only took a war for independence, and a lot of people had to die for us to get away so we could protect our freedom of speech. Anyway, I don't want to get too far off on a tangent on all that, but I just want to say this. This is certainly a historical moment, and people have lived entire lifetimes and not been able to see the British monarchy change hands,
mm-hmm.
or see somebody else come in as the new king or the new queen. So it doesn't happen very often.
No.
And so this is certainly a big deal. But let's kind of move on from that, because I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on the show talking about the old country, right?
Yes.
There's certainly a lot happening over here. There's a lot of people in America who think they're kings, who think they're queens.
Yeah, I'll agree to that.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of entitlement, and especially within our own political class. So, as we've talked about on this program before, and as you have heard discussed and analyzed as new information breaks on the whole immigration scenario, where Governor Greg Abbott of Texas is sending migrants to New York and to Washington, D.C. So, just so you know, New York has really gotten hardly any migrants from Texas compared to Washington, D.C. Governor Greg Abbott has decided to send the vast majority of these illegal aliens, he's decided to send the vast majority of them to Washington, D.C., because he's trying to bring this to the forefront of not just these sanctuary cities, but also to the congressmen and women in Washington, D.C. that are refusing to do anything with the border. Okay. Now, the federal government has the responsibility to guard our border. It's in Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution. The federal government is supposed to guarantee every state a Republican form of government, but it's also supposed to protect every state from invasion. And so when you have people gaining access by the thousands into your state illegally, when you haven't authorized them to access your state or access your country, that is absolutely 100% the definition of an invasion. And so the mayor of Washington, D.C., this is so funny to me. I'm going to go ahead and play this clip. So the Washington, D.C. is a sanctuary city. And the mayor of Washington, D.C. is now declaring a state of emergency. I'm going to go ahead and play this clip. This is D.C., one of the D.C. councilwomen, and she's claiming that the governor of Texas and Arizona have turned the nation's capital into a border town. This is about a 50-second clip, but listen to this whole thing. Rather remarkable.
So it's been said, but it's worth reiterating, that the governors of Texas and Arizona have created this crisis. And the federal government has not stepped up to assist the District of Columbia. So we, along with our regional partners, will do what we've always done. We'll rise to the occasion. We've learned from border towns like El Paso and Brownsville. And in many ways, the governors of Texas and Arizona have turned us into a border town. We don't know how long this will take to resolve. We don't know how long they will continue busing. And so the right thing to do here is to be prepared to ensure we can greet every bus. We can get people off on the right foot. We can get them where they want to go. And that will ultimately help them in their immigration process.
Okay, so checkmate. Governor Greg Abbott and these other governors along the border. She says it herself. These governors have essentially turned Washington, D.C. into a border town. That is exactly what these governors are trying to do. They are trying to make everybody else feel the pressure that they've been feeling as a border town. And so now this D.C. councilwoman comes right out and says, they've turned us into a border town. But now what's happening is they're trying to say that it's these governors' fault. The mayor actually said, and I might play this clip here in a second, but Mayor Muriel Bowser, who's the mayor of Washington, D.C., she goes on to say, I'm declaring a state of emergency and I'm going to do all these things. We have so many millions of dollars. We're working with the federal government. We need help from FEMA. It's a state of emergency. This is a problem that has been thrust upon us from something that is not our making. So she's trying to say it's not us who's creating this problem. It's these other governors who are making it a problem for us. And her own councilwoman says we are now essentially a border town. But instead of dealing with it the way you would expect somebody with a little bit of sanity to deal with it, by saying, you know what, we need to make sure we secure the border, Governor Abbott and these other border town governors have put Washington, D.C. and Mayor Bowser in a position where they have to put their money where their mouth is. And so they are going to try their hardest to to make sure that they're accommodating all these people. They're going to make sure that they treat them with all the humanitarian benevolence that they have been preaching that these border town governors have been doing, should have been doing with these illegal immigrants. But the thing is they can't do this themselves. They actually have to go to the federal government and say, we need help doing this. We're not capable of doing this. We're being overrun. We're not capable of doing it on our own. Essentially, we're being invaded. But the difference is instead of saying we could just secure the border and this would all come to a stop, their own pride is forcing them to entrench in their misguided ideology that instead of securing the border, they're saying they're going to provide medical care, they're going to provide education, they're going to provide housing and any assistance that these illegal immigrants need. But this is where they're making a fatal error. They're saying, Washington, D.C. is saying, these immigrants, we have to understand this is just one of their stops on their journey. They're going to be moving on. Who says? Who says they're going to be moving on? Did she interview all these immigrants that are coming in and they're like, oh, no, we're just stopping in D.C. and then we're off to California, we're off to Missouri, we're off to Michigan, we're headed down to Georgia or Oklahoma? No. She's not saying that. She's trying to say these people are just passing through. Well, these people are illegal immigrants. The vast majority of them arrive on our soil without a plan. They just want to be in the country, and then they kind of will figure it out from there, you know, where they can go to get jobs, where they can go to get help. Well, because they're coming across illegally. And she's under the impression that these people have a plan. They already have a destination. They already have a job lined up. They already have everything taken care of. They're just being bused to Washington, D.C., and so she's going to treat them like they're a Flying J travel center. Come on in. We'll give you your food. We'll give you your education, and then you'll be on your way. What is she going to do when they decide not to leave? Because they're getting everything that they need right there in Washington, D.C. So Mayor Bowser, the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, these other sanctuary cities are now in a position where instead of just being the sanctuary city that they'd like to preach to everybody. See, it's really easy to be a sanctuary city when the people that you're wanting to be a sanctuary for aren't coming to your city to begin with. It's really easy to say you're going to be a sanctuary city when the problem is down in the southern region of the United States of America. Checkmate. Governor Abbott. Governor DeSantis, the governor of Arizona, I'm not sure which all governors are participating in this, but these border states, these states that are seeing an influx of undocumented migrants, these illegal aliens coming across the border, good for them. Good for them with being able to play this chess game in a way that has put these Democrat liberal progressives in a place where they actually have to act on their ideology of open borders and just taking care of everybody. But now we have discovered, because they've been so skillful at putting people like Mayor Bowser of Washington, D.C. in this situation, they've been so skillful at doing this, we now know that the progressives cannot do this unless they declare a state of emergency, unless they go to the federal government asking for tens of millions of dollars in help, unless they grow government in their cities by creating new departments and new agencies to deal with this influx of migration. They just can't do it. These leftist mayors can't do it without a state of emergency, and now they know exactly what's been going on along the border. And this whole issue, this people need to analyze this issue and turn this into an easy-to-digest narrative on our way into the midterm elections. Borders matter. Secure borders matter. Folks, stick around because in just a couple seconds, we're going to be coming up and talking a little bit more about the economy. The interest rates are going to continue to go up, maybe much stronger and faster than we previously thought. And then in the third segment today, we're going to be playing the B or not the B. Zach, you're going to be on the hot seat today in the B or not the B.
I'm ready.
All right. Sounds good. This is Paul Kirtman, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. And welcome back to the Paul Kirtman Show here at News Talk STL. Man, we talked about a couple things there in the first segment. Of course, we talked a little bit about the Queen passing away. We talked a little bit about Governor Abbott putting the mayors of Washington, D.C. and New York in a political situation that forces them to put their money where their progressive mouth is. But that should be, and I believe will be, an issue as we go into the November election. But the other issue that we're going to be watching, that the American people are going to be paying attention to because they can't help it on our way into these November general elections, has everything to do with the economy. Normally, now, folks, I work in the markets. I put together portfolios. I tailor fit people's portfolios to their personal goals and objectives. Use high quality investments, put together a portfolio to help them meet their needs. But a big part of putting together somebody's portfolio is you want to know what that person's tolerance for risk is. Because when markets get really volatile, you don't want your clients staying up all night long, biting their fingernails, wondering if their IRA or their brokerage account has just lost 60% of its value, right? Because when you see volatility like we're seeing in the market right now, people really begin to pay attention to what the Dow Jones Industrial Average is doing, what the S&P 500 is doing every day. Is it up 2%? Is it down 3%? A couple of years ago, when the government forced all the businesses to shut down, literally induced a recession by telling people to close the doors of their business and telling people that they're not allowed to go out. We saw the markets really, really begin to tumble. And working in the markets, people start calling me, right? Because the 401k or the IRA that you have put away for the next 20 or 30 years as you're working towards retirement, or maybe you're already retired. But then when you see the markets happening with this tremendous amount of volatility on a day-to-day basis, and like we saw a few years ago, sometimes the market would drop so far, so fast, that a bell rings, and it's like a circuit breaker flips, right? A bell would ring, and all of a sudden, all the exchanges are told, you have to shut down. We have to let everybody reset for like 15 minutes and cool off before we open the markets back up. So when there's a lot of volatility, we actually have systems built in to the whole trading process where all the markets will shut down just so everybody can kind of, you know, get their bearings about them, so we don't have like an emotional sell-off that just feeds off of its own emotion, right? We haven't seen that yet since 2020. But I'm telling you, people are really concerned about what the markets are doing right now. And the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. And you couple that with the fact that inflation is at 40-year highs. And I think on Monday, we have another inflation report coming out. We're going to find out on Monday what the inflation for August was. Did inflation go up or did it go down? Now, I know that it went down in July. And so a lot of people are thinking to themselves, hey, inflation's peaked. We're on our way out of this. But we already saw inflation dip in May and April, or maybe it was April, but then it shot right back up through the roof in May. So just because inflation goes down 1 month from the previous month doesn't mean we're out of the woods yet. It could go right back up. One of the reasons, though, why inflation might begin to start coming down a little bit has to do with the fact that as costs continue to climb because of inflation, or because that we've had problems with the supply chain, and so it's harder to get products from the ships to the shelves, and so as products become a little bit more scarce, the prices will rise as people compete for these limited resources, these limited products, because there's less of them on the shelves, right? Because the supply chain's been interrupted, and a large part of that is due to COVID and all the different regulations and mandates that we've been dealing with for the last couple of years. But people are really, really paying attention to the economy. And going into the November elections, people, I believe, people are going to vote based on the way they've been forced to vote with their pocketbook over the last year. What do I mean by that? I mean this. Gas is up. Or gas prices have been up. They're still up compared to where they were 12 months ago. They're down compared to where they were 2 months ago, but they're still up. They're still very high. And I know we feel like we've gotten some relief because gas prices have come down a dollar, but they're still higher, way higher than they were 12 months ago. So we have this kind of a false sense of relief. It's certainly relief, right? But it's not the kind of relief that we would like to have where gas prices are normalizing again and bringing us back to where we were during the Trump era. But since gas prices have been high, Reuters put out an article saying that people have actually adjusted and made modifications to their travel habits. That way they can actually save money on gas. And so I know President Biden has really tried to pat himself on the back for bringing gas prices down. But the fact of the matter is the responsibility for bringing gas prices down is largely in part due to the fact that people have found ways to quit using as much gas. And as the demand for gas has come down a little bit, so have the prices. So that's what I mean when I say people vote with their pocketbook. You don't like high gas prices? Well, you quit paying for as much gas. And eventually prices begin to come back down. I believe people are going to be voting in November based on how they've been forced to spend their money for the last couple of years, because we've had more moms and dads sitting around the dinner table trying to figure out what bills they're not going to pay from month to month as the economy and the economic conditions have continued to worsen. And here's the thing. If you pay attention to, you know, they like to call it earnings season. Whenever you have lots of big companies, like say from the S&P 500, that are putting out their quarterly reports and they're talking about what their earnings were, they're talking about what their revenue was, they're talking about their shortcomings and other places where they've been able to make good gains in the market. These public companies put out quarterly reports. And one thing that we've been getting from a lot of the biggest companies in America, some of the biggest employers in America, is that they think that there's harder economic times ahead. And so many of these companies are already facing economic pressures, but they believe there's going to be heavier economic pressures in the future. So they're beginning to lay more people off. And as we lay more people off, the economic condition, for a number of reasons, there's going to be a number of variables that spin off from this, the economic conditions stand a good chance of actually worsening between now and Election Day, and not just now on Election Day, not just now in the midterms, but now and the general election that takes place in two years, the next presidential election. The Federal Reserve is saying, now at the beginning of the year, the Federal Reserve said, hey, in order to combat inflation, we're probably going to have 6 or 7 votes to raise the federal funds rate by a quarter of a percent. They have blown right through that projection, and now they are raising the federal funds rate, not just in increments of 0.25%, but in increments of 0.75%. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, so every year, I'm not sure how much you follow this, Zach, but every year, the chairman of the Federal Reserve gives a speech out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And when he's in Wyoming, he usually uses this opportunity to give a speech on policy, shifts in Federal Reserve policy, things they're going to start doing different economic outlooks, maybe to recognize economic or monetary achievement in terms of policy. And it usually is a speech that lasts about 35 or 45 minutes. A couple weeks ago, and you might have noticed that the market for the last 2 weeks has really been moving down pretty quick. That all started when Jerome Powell was out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and he gave a speech, his annual speech, but instead of a 35 or 45 minute speech, he spoke for 8 minutes. He cut it really, really short. He didn't put a lot of fanfare into different policy directions. He came out and he said, I'm going to paraphrase here. Mm-hmm. Things are pretty bad, and so the Federal Reserve is going to have to be pretty aggressive. And the aggressive posture of the Federal Reserve might cause a little pain in order to help bring us out of the situation that we're in. In other words, things are pretty bad, and it's going to be painful as we try to work our way out of this. Using the word pain, using the word attack, those types of words coming from who is essentially the leader of economic policy for the country, essentially, that puts a lot of fear into not only retail investors, but also institutional investors, and thus began a sell-off in the market. I was hoping that we were going to be coming up out of this bear market, But I've also heard other economists say that if we're at 40-year high rates of inflation, in order to dig us out of that, the Federal Reserve may have to go back to what the interest rates were 40 years ago when they got us out of it the first time. And back then, we were seeing interest rates, you know, in or near the double digits. I actually knew a lady who had a long-term fixed income security, and she was getting an 18% rate of return on that. This was when I first started in the industry several years ago, you know, and everyone was like, holy cow, 18% rate of return. But it's because she had held on to this instrument since the early 80s, mm-hmm. early 80s. So the Federal Reserve has us. I'm telling you right now, Jerome Powell, I am not a fan of the Federal Reserve. I am not a fan of the monetary policy that we have right now. The monetary policy that we have right now, the money that we have right now, a fiat currency, money that's not backed by anything except the promise from the government that it's worth something. This is, I would like to say, relatively new in history, but it's more than relatively new. It's like brand spanking new. Like, it's only been just a little over 100 years since the Federal Reserve was even instituted. Before that, we had a monetary policy that was far more regulated by the U.S. Congress than it was the Federal Reserve, and it was actually backed by something. Now, at this point in the world history, practically every government, if not every government, has a fiat currency. And what I mean by fiat currency is it's a money that's not backed by anything. And so there's just so much that could happen from this point moving forward. In terms of what our economic, what's going to happen to the economy in America, but not just America, but the economy around the world. China is raising their interest rates because they know that they are facing some incredibly deep economic abyss. So they've begun to raise their interest rates, and it's cooled off their economy a little bit. And that's kind of, you know, something that they have to dig themselves out of. But also in Europe, this week they announced the exact same thing in Europe. So we are potentially looking at, and I'm not trying to be an alarmist here, right? Because if you have a strategy for your investments, if you have a strategy and you have peace about what you're invested in and why you're invested in it and the goals that you're going to be reaching with that, if you have a strategy for it, stay the course. Stay with your strategy, okay? Visit with your financial professional. But I'm just saying that the global situation is in a very precarious environment right now financially. And we saw similar conditions in 2008 for other reasons, but some of these reasons have a way of continuing to resurface from time to time. But the big news is this. Jerome Powell will probably be raising, and the Federal Reserve, the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, will probably be raising interest rates by another 0.75% before the end of this month. The current target rate, federal funds rate, is 2.25 to 2.5%. So this will put it up to right about 3.75%. It's a pretty big jump that we're going, that we're making here just for interest rates to be climbing this fast, this quick. But there's a possibility it could climb a lot faster. And as that happens, it will cool off investing in the economy because this means that money is going to become more expensive to borrow and therefore more expensive to invest. Not, you know, more expensive for people to invest in new businesses and new enterprise, the thing that usually churns out, you know, a thriving, robust economy. So I'm saying all this. I'm talking about the Federal Reserve. I'm saying all this just to tell you, be paying attention to what the Federal Reserve is doing. What they're doing will have an impact on the economy, will have an impact on the market. Go to prkurtman.com if you want to reach out to me, if you just want to get my weekly emails that I put out, prkurtman.com. It's the registered investment advisory firm that I own. Hey, when we come back, we're going to be playing the B or not the B. And Zach is a first-time contestant on the B or not the B. And so this is going to be a lot of fun as we read off all these headlines, and Zach has to guess whether they're real headlines or fake headlines.
Ooh, okay.
You're going to like this.
All right.
You're going to enjoy it. All right, we'll be back here in just a minute. 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. All right, and here we are, News Talk STL. This is the Paul Kurtman Show. I am Paul Kurtman. And we're going to have a little fun here. But before we get to the B or not the B, I got one more news headline. It's a local headline. It's kind of local and national, actually. Zach, do you like Emo's Pizza?
I do. I'm an Emo's guy.
Are you really? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to make a lot of enemies right now. I'm going to tell St. Louis I cannot stand Emo's Pizza.
Okay.
I know it's the St. Louis pizza place, and it like is like one of those things that's on the map for St. Louis. I've never liked it. I like their salad dressing. I like that. Mm-hmm. But I've just never liked Emo's Pizza. Never have. And I'm wondering, do people outside of St. Louis like Emo's or not? And I think we're going to find out soon, because Emo's Pizza will begin selling frozen pizzas at grocery stores locally and nationwide. I say nationwide, they're going to be selling them as far as Virginia. There's going to be some places in Virginia. This article here says, by October 3rd, Emo's Pizza will be available in frozen at grocery stores throughout the St. Louis area and in a region stretching from Virginia to Oklahoma. So I want to say congratulations to Emo's.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a big leap to go from kind of being Missouri, St. Louis specific chain to now actually having your pizzas in stores from Oklahoma to Virginia. That's a pretty big step.
It is.
It's pretty big. So congratulations to Emo's. I will not be buying them just because I don't like Emo's Pizza.
Right.
I just never have. And if anybody wants to send in hate mail because you love Emo's, and I don't know what the deal is, but people will get very argumentative.
Yeah, I'm not that extreme.
Okay, but some people are. I mentioned this one time. It was like back in like 1999. I was at my church, and in the youth group, I had mentioned, oh, man, yeah, I don't like Emo's. And it was like everybody had just taken the angry pill, and they were just and it all hit in, kicked in all at once, and they were mad at me, and a lot of in-your-face, Emo's is the best, Emo's is the best. So if anybody feels like that, you can send me an email, paulkirtman.com. Those emails, even the hate emails, will go straight to my cell phone, and I'll read every one of them. But congratulations, Emo's. I'm glad you were able to do that. That's good for your business and good for your employees. All right, let's go to the B or not the B. So I'm going to read a list of headlines here. And if you believe the headline is a fake headline that we would find at the Babylon Bee, you just have to say, that's the Babylon Bee.
Okay.
If you think that it's a real headline from not the bee, then you have to say, oh, that's got to be not the bee. That has to be a real headline, so that can't be the Babylon Bee.
All right.
Easy enough.
Easy.
Okay. We'll keep score.
Okay.
All right. So let me see. Do I have a pen or pencil here? I don't. We'll just do this. We'll just have to remember this in our heads.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see if we can keep the math right. All right. First headline is this. Here's the first headline. Is this the B or not the B? Headline is, Stacey Abrams claims the 2022 midterms have already been stolen.
I'm going to go with the B.
Good job.
All right.
That is the B. That one I thought would actually be kind of tricky because she's wild enough to say that, you know, for those listening, and if you're not familiar with Stacey Abrams, she's the politician, the candidate from Georgia. Very progressive, far to the left, very much of a radical, and has made several outrageous claims about all kinds of things. So it's possible that she might have already said that the 2022 midterms have already been stolen, but she did not. That is a Babylon Bee headline. That is a satire headline. Congratulations. Right now, you are one for one. Okay. Next headline is, one of the super secure Michigan voting machines from 2020 has recently been sold on eBay for $1,200.
I'm going to go with B again, going with the gut here.
Nope, that is not the B. That is a real headline.
Okay.
One of these ultra-secure electronic voting machines that nobody could ever tamper with somehow made its way from Michigan. It was in the system at Michigan. It made its way onto eBay, and somebody purchased it for $1,200.
That's what threw me, was the $1,200.
Yeah.
It seems cheap
for a voting machine.
Yeah, for that, because I know, you know, I'm voted. I know what they look like and stuff. I'm just like, $1,200.
You know, you could buy a lot of votes, that $1,200. You buy a voting machine. Someone just bought a voting machine, a legit, an actual voting machine for $1,200. These things aren't supposed to be able to be available for sale.
Mm-hmm.
someone bought one for $1,200 on eBay, and it was one from Michigan. So, you're 1-1 now.
Okay, 1-1.
Okay. Next headline. Headline is, dog scientists determine water from toilet contains essential vitamins not found in water bowl. I'll read that again. Dog scientists determine water from toilet contains essential vitamins not found in water bowl.
Okay. That's a tough one because dog scientist doesn't sound very professional. But but I'm going to go with not the bee.
That is the Babylon Bee.
Okay.
So you're 1-2 now. That is a fake headline. It's a little miss. It's hard to understand because the headline reads, dog scientists determine what. Well, are these scientists who study dogs? Or right. is it an actual dog scientist?
Yeah.
I actually had to click on the link, mm-hmm. and they actually mean a dog who is a scientist.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, if I would have explained that one a little bit deeper, mm-hmm. then you would have definitely gotten it. But I just had to stick with just a headline.
Okay.
Okay, so now you're 1-2.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Headline is, Kamala Harris claims she never ate a grape until she was 20 years old because she was standing in solidarity with the United Farm Workers boycotts.
B? I'm going B on that.
That's a real headline. Kamala Harris actually made the claim that she never ate a grape. So when she was 2 and 3 years old, mm-hmm. you know, when she was going to school with her lunchbox.
Right.
She refused to eat grapes because even when she was 4 and 5, she was standing in solidarity with the United Farm Workers boycotts, and so she refused to eat grapes until she was 20 years old.
Okay. Oh, I see. She was boycotting...
The grapes. Okay. Because that would have been an affront to the positions that the United Farm Workers were taking.
Okay, well, I'm not doing real well.
Yeah, you're 1-3.
One and three. 1-3 now.
You know what? You're going to get the hang of this, though. And this is why, this is the beauty of the Babylon Bee. The headlines
mm-hmm.
are ridiculous enough, but they hint at just enough truth that mm-hmm. it could actually be. You know, we live in a crazy world.
Yeah.
Maybe things really are just that crazy. Okay. Here's another one. 10 socialist arguments that destroy capitalism for good. One of the bullet points under a headline titled 10 socialist arguments that destroy capitalism for good. One of the bullet points is this. Under socialism, everyone will get 3 houses like Bernie Sanders. Is that the Babylon Bee? Or is that a real headline?
I'm going to go against the gut here, and I'm going to go not the B.
You should have gone with your gut. That is a fake article from the Babylon Bee. But the thing is socialists are so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're so crazy. They probably all think that, hey, under socialism, we all would have 3 houses. We all would have multiple homes.
Yeah.
So now you're, what is this, 1-4?
This is 1-4 now.
1-4, okay. You got one right. So you're not doing that bad, really. You got one right. And for all the listeners who are listening in your car, if you're listening at home or on the podcast, you might be doing a little bit better than Zach right now.
Hopefully.
And so if you are, just let us know because, Zach, you're actually doing pretty bad.
Yes.
I know I was saying it's not that bad. This is pretty bad. This is probably one of the worst so far, but it's okay. This is your first time.
Yeah.
And you've probably, I don't know, maybe you've never played a game like this. Now, here's one. That just sounds nutty enough that it could just be nutty or it could be true.
Okay.
Headline is, DC tourist's electric car died in West Virginia. Coal miners pushed it all the way to their coal mine to get it a charge.
Oh, man. Coal miners pushing the car to get a charge.
Coal miners pushing an electric mm-hmm. car
yeah, the electric
to
car.
The
yeah,
coal yeah. mine to get charged.
But see, it's in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go with B.
That is no.
It's gotta be the B.
It's not the B. That is a real headline. This actually happened. There was an electric car. Being driven by tourists that were on their way to Washington, D.C., they ran out of juice mm-hmm. in West Virginia. A bunch of coal miners saw them stranded on the road, and they offered to help. So they pushed the car just down the road to the entrance of their coal mine, and there they were able to get this electric vehicle charged up. I'm telling you what, that is probably one of the best headlines to come across. There is so much that we could make out of this. The fact that coal miners came to the rescue of, and I don't want to call the people driving this electric car like eco freaks, you know, mm-hmm. or anything like that, because mm-hmm. I like electric vehicles. I like Tesla. I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with us saying that we're going to, you know, kick all these fossil fuels right to the curb mm-hmm. because we're going to force everybody into electric vehicles, you know, under the Biden administration. But here it's the coal miners that came to the rescue and pushed this electric vehicle, not just to any old place to plug itself in, but coal miners pushed it to the coal mine.
The coal mine.
So that way they could help these folks get their electric vehicle charged up. So that way they could go to the nation's capital to visit and walk around and see the sights.
They must have been really close to that coal mine.
They probably were. They probably were. The picture on the headline shows like 7 or 8 coal miners all filthy and dirty, mm-hmm. and they're literally pushing an electric vehicle. You can find all the links to all the B or not the B headlines that we're talking about right now. If you go to paulkerbin.com, scroll all the way down to the bottom, go to radio number 67, and there you will see all the links to all these headlines. Here's another one. How much more time do we got here?
We got 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's do a couple more. Okay. Headline is, bouncing on trampolines is now a sign of white supremacy.
That's not the B.
Good job. That is a real headline. Mm-hmm. So now you're 2-5 or 2-6?
This is 2-5.
2-5. Mm-hmm. All right.
A proud 2-5.
I don't have enough headlines here to allow you to dig yourself out of this hole.
That's, yeah.
So you've already certainly lost. Mm-hmm. Like you've haven't done that great.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's your first time. And these headlines are getting crazier and nuttier every day. So mm-hmm. it's just harder to tell. Okay, here's another one. This is one of my favorite ones because this could totally be true or completely not be true. So this is a hard one. This is another hard one. Headline is, Trump says FBI stole medical records from Mar-a-Lago, but all they'll discover is that he's, quote, an absolutely perfect physical specimen. So did Donald Trump actually say, in reference to these medical records taken by the FBI, that all they'll find out is that he's, quote, an absolutely perfect physical specimen?
I'm going to go with not the B.
That is not the B. Good job.
That sounds like real Trump.
That
there.
Sounds like real Trump. But, yes. but even real Trump could yeah. be the Babylon Bee. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there are headlines. So we had Seth Dillon come in to do an event with Seth Dillon is the CEO of the Babylon Bee. He spoke at an event that I hosted and that News Talk STL was a part of last April. Donald Trump Jr. was a speaker at the mm-hmm. event. And right after Donald Trump Jr. left the platform, Seth Dillon, the CEO of the Babylon Bee, came up and did a whole audiovisual presentation on all these headlines that they've written at the Babylon Bee that were meant to be jokes, but then became true headlines.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
and one of the headlines was how Donald Trump said that I'm trying to remember what he said, something about he's better than Jesus, you mm-hmm. know? And within weeks, Donald Trump said something to the effect of people love me more than something, not more than Jesus, but something along those lines that yeah. it kind of rang true to the Babylon Bee headline. Mm-hmm. So Donald Trump, this could just have easily been a Babylon. So if you would have gotten this wrong, I probably would have given it to you anyway because it would probably be right within the next couple of days.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump actually said that all the FBI is going to find in relation to these medical records that the FBI took from Mar-a-Lago, he said all the FBI is going to find out is that I'm an absolutely perfect physical specimen. I love that.
Yeah.
And for that reason, just for the entertainment value alone, Donald Trump should always be allowed on every single social media outlet
yes.
in the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's gonna be it for the B or not the B. But you are now, was that 3-5?
Yeah, this is a 3 for 5, so I made it up a little bit.
You did. You did. You really started to make a comeback there. I wish I had more headlines, and I wish that we had more time, but we don't, because this is the end of the Paul Kirpin Show. But you can make sure, you can, and I think you should make sure, that you join us again next Saturday from 12 to 1 on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL. Make sure that you go to our social media sites, Rumble, YouTube. Visit the website. Sign up for the email list. You'll get some good, relevant information on a regular basis there. But make sure that you tune in throughout the rest of the week for everything else right here on News Talk STL.